If you had been recording with Lori, you would have gotten started like 15 minutes ago, and it would have been so much smoother, and she would not probably have almost fallen out of her chair. Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. Where in the world are you right now? You're on the East Coast, right?
Yeah, I am near Detroit.
Okay, cool. A lot of like manufacturing and factory stuff out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I picture it with like a lot of smog. Is that?
Actually, yeah, sometimes when I drive to work, there are a few spots that are difficult to see through because it's coming up through the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been that far east, but that's kind of how I picture Detroit. Laura, do you have any pronouns that you use?
Yes, they, them.
Awesome. And so welcome to the podcast again. Tell us about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background, who you are, where you're from, whatever you want to share.
Yeah, so I'm Laura. I grew up in Michigan. I have lived in the same area for my whole life. I make watches and play D&D and do some leather working. And I am a big old nerd and have recently gotten diagnosed with BPD.
Awesome. You sound very creative.
I try to be. And I doubt myself a lot, but people tell me I am. So I try to believe them.
Yes. I want to see the leather work. I think that's so cool.
I will show you so much.
Yeah, I love it. So you just recently got your diagnosis. How recent is recent? Like, it's like recent, right?
Yeah. So I started seeing my therapist in September, and I think it was like October. Mm-hmm. So just like a month of seeing her, and she was like, oh yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were asking about like, is that kind of normal? I don't know what other people's experiences have been like, but I met a psychiatrist and had a 90-minute appointment, and he diagnosed me, right? So like, and we didn't take any tests. He was just like, yeah, you're borderline as fuck. With my clients, I can generally tell pretty quickly, like first couple appointments, like, oh, this is giving off borderline kind of like vibes or whatever, but I won't necessarily give a diagnosis until I've got more data, because it's a big diagnosis to get, as you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think my therapist was also reluctant to give it because so many people are, you know, terrified of it. Reasonably so, because of stigma. But I had brought it up in our first session because for like a long time I've been thinking it, and she did not realize how important it was to me. So there was literally one session that I came in just like crying immediately over it, and I just don't really cry in therapy. I don't know why. I'm very analytical in it, but so obviously she knew something was wrong immediately, like the second I walked in the door. And I made it very clear how important it was. And I was like, I brought this up the first session and we haven't gone back to it. And like, it doesn't feel like it's important to you. And she was like, you know, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize, like, that's on me. I should have realized because you did bring it up. And then we went over some of the criteria, and she stopped me at like number two, and she was like, okay, I've noticed enough other than that, like, yeah, definitely. She's like, so how do you feel? Like, she expected me to be like heartbroken or something, and I was like, no, I feel like I have like belonging now. Like, because I want to go out and find people who feel like me, you know.
That's totally so validating.
Yeah.
That was such a great example of self-advocacy, like for our listeners, that you came back to this thing and you said it doesn't feel like it's important to you. And that kind of gave her the, oh shit, this is important. Like, this is something that we really need to kind of get into. And then she validated you really well. Mm-hmm. So that was like a good example of repairing in therapy, because I think sometimes people will not attempt to repair for like fear of upsetting their therapist or fear of questioning their therapist's skills or whatever. But like, no, you get to go back. Like, you get to ask more questions. It's important that we do that.
And she's like a great therapist. So I don't want to come off as like her being terrible or anything. She is so awesome. And actually, when during that same session, she like talked about DBT and she was like just really open with me and like, she's tried it before and it didn't really work for her. Like, it, you know, she just didn't pick it up. So she's like, I will help you find someone who can actually help you because I think it would be really beneficial to you. And I'm still seeing her because it's really hard to find someone.
Totally. But,
and she also, it is really hard to tell her when things aren't, no, I should specify, it was really hard to tell her when things aren't working because there were definitely a few things like, oh my God, the like change your thoughts thing. I remember being
that so shit doesn't big. Work.
I hate it so much.
It doesn't and, work. Like,
we went over it for so long and she just, it felt to me like she was just repeating the same thing over and over. And I was getting so frustrated. I was like, this does not make literally any sense. I'm not knowing anything new. I know I have to change my thoughts. That's the whole problem. Like, how do I do that? And when she realized how frustrated I was getting with that, she was like, let's never do that again. Mm-hmm. So,
yes. Dialectical behavioral therapy is the pathway to cognitive behavioral therapy, which is like how to change your thoughts, right? So like, yeah, we can't change our thoughts until we change our behavior, because changing our behavior brings us back down to baseline where our thoughts are rational, right? Like, but we can't help our thoughts be rational without getting back in touch with the body, the mindfulness, and then like the fact checking and the other things. Instead of cognitive behavioral therapy is sometimes just like, you know, have you noticed that like you're having some black and white thinking, and normal, quote unquote, not borderline people are like, oh yeah, let me find the gray. And people with borderline are thinking, what the fuck, bitch, are you talking about? Because I know that this thing that I believe is true, right? Mm-hmm. Not, so.
And I often even like, I will be like, no, I know that I'm wrong and being crazy right now, but that doesn't matter because that's not how I feel.
And actually, like, trying to do cognitive behavioral therapy with someone who fundamentally it doesn't work for initially, it can work for eventually, can turn us off to therapy, make us feel like we're broken, make us feel like things will never work. And then what do you know? We never go back to therapy. So mm-hmm. that is inherently dangerous. And I love what your therapist did. And it really bothers me when clinicians don't do this like right off the bat. Pretty much as soon as someone has received their borderline diagnosis, once a week or like every other week, outpatient therapy with a clinician who knows the basics of DBT, but isn't like deep in DBT, is not going to be enough at first. And we can front load it as therapists by being like, all right, awesome. We got your diagnosis. If you want this to get easier, faster, let's find an IOP program, like a dialectical behavioral therapy intensive outpatient program, and let's get you started.
Okay. Can you
That's explain, ethical.
Can you explain the difference between that?
The difference between once a week therapy and like a going to an IOP program?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that question. So once a week therapy, like 60 minutes, 53 minutes or whatever of going to see your therapist and doing the kind of like general, tell me about how your week has been and how is like, you know, how are these relationships going and whatever. Is not half of that session like talk therapy and processing before you get to the last 20 minutes of like, okay, so next time let's talk about how to use this skill, right? That is not going to get us as people with borderline to faster results. But if you go to like 2 to 4 hours a week of intensive DBT, you skip all the, hey, how are things? how's that relationship with your mom going? And you get right into the skills work.
That sounds so wonderful.
Yes. Well, IOP is great. And I really believe that those of us with borderline benefit from the intensive skills work before we go back to tell me about the relationship with your mom, right?
Yeah.
Because then we have the tools to not become as dysregulated in session, and then we can actually like process the relationships with our mom.
I definitely get frustrated a lot when we'll go over something and we get to like the root cause of it or whatever, and it'll be like, okay, so we need to work on this. And like, all I'm doing is sitting here thinking like, I already know I need to work on it, but I have literally no idea how. And I'll ask how, and it feels like there's not actually an answer. And like, I get that it's complicated, and I'm not like putting that like on my therapist. That's, you know, that's what she's trying to do. But just for me, it's really frustrating because I'm like, I already knew half of what we talked about because I analyze myself all the time.
Like, yeah, people with borderline have high insight. We know what's up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to go back into my trauma. I know that I felt invalidated and rejected in childhood, and that X, Y, and Z thing fucked me up. I need to figure out how to be more functional as a human.
Yeah.
I digress. We went down a whole tangent. How old are you?
29.
Okay. I do have a thought about a resource for you, but we'll come back to it. So you got diagnosed at 29. Tell us kind of a bit about your journey to diagnosis in terms of like, what was childhood like for you? Presumably you started having borderline symptoms really young, right? So like, tell us a little bit about that to the degree that you're comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have just decided that my parents will never listen to this because I'm about to talk about them. Yeah, so my dad had crazy anger issues and would just scream at us all the time, every day, over nothing. And my mom was super passive aggressive. So I got like the best of both worlds. Always trying to figure out why people are angry at me because she would never tell us. And
so confusing.
It's so confusing. And half the time she wouldn't even be angry at one of us. It would be like angry at like my dad or something. So he would like come home and yell at us because she's mad and we didn't fix it. So I feel like just that little bit right there is a perfect way to borderline because I'm literally responsible for my mom's happiness when I'm like 12 years old. And I always had the thing where I assume a lot of people with borderline have of like, oh, there's something different and wrong with me. Normal people don't function like this. And then this is kind of funny, kind of embarrassing, is that the first time that it crossed my mind, well, it's one of two times, I can't remember, but it's watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the TV show. Because that was like, oh, she's me. But then one of my friends got diagnosed and was describing it. And the specific thing that they said that made me relate to it is they're like, if anything happens to me, it is more extreme than has happened to anyone else ever. Like, if I fall down and hurt my knee, this is the worst injury anyone has ever gotten. And no one else will ever understand how much it hurts. And from there,
when I'm literally like, it's like you broke your toe. Right? Until, is this your experience? If you're in an actual, I don't know if you've been there, I hope you haven't, but if you're in an actual life-threatening scenario, then you're super calm, right? Because yeah, the body is prepared for this. So like, I got in a snowboarding accident one time where I went off trail, wasn't supposed to, my dad was pissed, blah, blah, blah. I hit a tree. I was alone. So I was not on trail to where anyone could see me. And I just remember being like, okay, like, I'm sure my ribs are broken. I actually had like a whatever, hematoma, internal bleeding. My ribs are broken. I have to get off this tree. I have to get off this tree. I have to get my snowboard off this tree. I have to crawl at least to the run so that someone can find me, right? And that was easy, no freak out. But we break our toe and the world is over.
Yes. Like anytime I've ever been in like a car crash that could have gone terribly wrong, it's just like this very calm, like, okay, I know how to deal with this and make the damage as minimum as I can. Like panic sets in after, but in the moment, it's fine. Yeah. Versus just a regular ass thing that happens. It's like, I'm literally going to die.
Well, and I mean, if your dad was really angry in childhood, then you were living in that kind of fear every day, right? Of like, what's going to happen next? How will this escalate? Will I be safe? And so that unsure of your safety actually helps us, like, in some ways assess our safety later on. But then it also makes us think that we're unsafe all the time. So that's really confusing too.
Yeah. Because it would be like, oh, I left the light on. My dad's going to like tell me that we're going to lose all of our money and be homeless or something because he can't afford to leave the lights on all the time. And he's going to be screaming the whole time.
Yeah, that's really scary. Mm-hmm. So a lot of big feelings. Any other kind of symptoms of like relationship struggles and, you know, those kinds of things? Impulsivity. I'm a drunk and had a lot of sex, which is normal. But like Lori, for example, doesn't have a drinking problem and like her symptoms show up really differently. So how do you kind of feel about the way your symptoms show up?
I definitely have a lot of impulsivity when it comes to spending, which is awesome. it's horrible. But I have my huge, huge thing that I like need to work on is a favorite person because, oh my God, when I feel like my favorite person is done with me or mad at me, my life is over. It's horrible. I hate it. And that like friggin' just empty feeling. And it's not even like they have done anything, right? It's just like, oh, you haven't talked to me in like 3 days, so I guess you're sick of me. I feel like that's like the main thing that I'm like, I need to figure out how to get over this empty feeling and not have my life revolve around just one of my friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could have no friends. That's what I've done.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, I have all of these kind of like quote unquote parasocial relationships, which I just like that term. I have a lot of people in the borderline community that I consider like friendly with or friends or whatever, but I don't really have any like real life friends. I do from like a perspective of I'll see you once a year or whatever. And I really, that's enough for me. I really like that. But I told you I'm starting a D&D group, right? And
yeah,
with these two people that we made new friends with in our new town, and they're fabulous, like, you know, fucking fabulous, all the things, like super leftist, queer, person of color, right? Like they're like our people. The thought of them coming to my house one Friday a month is fucking terrifying to me, right? Terrifying. So I have no advice for you around this person thing, but have you listened to the FP episodes?
I think so, but it's been a while because I found the podcast back in like July and I searched for, you know, the specific ones that I wanted. So I should listen again though. Actually, that's a great idea.
Yeah. there is a pretty like good and like deep dive into favorite person that we did this summer. So you won't have to scroll back too far, but I'd be interested to know your experience with that. So are you partnered or is this just something you experience in your friendships?
It's just friendship, you know, which like in a way I feel like maybe makes it worse and better because that person does not feel obligated in the slightest to give me the attention that I want, which is very reasonable because I want every single moment of their attention. And in a partnership, that would be a little more reasonable to want, not to the extent that I want, but yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know.
Well, it definitely can get better because I think I experienced that in my teens and early 20s, but now I make a joke about not having any friends, right? But I really am, for the most part, very fulfilled in my like life and in my social relationships. And part of it, undoubtedly, is my work because I talk all day long. Mm. And so my social battery is low, but I really don't feel the need to obsess about spending time with my partner. Like, we spend 2 hours a night together and have our routine or whatever, but you know, he paints and draws and I go tinker and do art and nap and write and all of those things. So it definitely can get better.
That sounds so peaceful.
It's so peaceful. Yeah, actually the last night we got like halfway through this docuseries we're watching and I was like, okay, I'm done. You're going to have to start watching Bob's Burgers. Then it's time for me to go do other things because I'm just done now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you medicated?
Yes. I'm on 10 milligrams of Lexapro and something else that I don't remember, but to help with focus.
Do you have ADHD?
I don't know. I have been talking about my therapist with that because I feel like I do, but she thinks that it might just be like everything that I bring up, she's like, that might just be anxiety. So that's something that we're like going to look into, but there's a lot to get to. So we haven't really done a deep dive on it yet.
I love it. Oh my God, we should take a few minutes and do the ADHD self-reporting tool like at the end of this.
Okay, yeah.
There's actually a really, I wouldn't say really high, but there is a higher than average positive correlation between people with BPD and people with ADHD. And so that's kind of an interesting, like, fun fact.
I wonder why.
I don't know. I don't know. But so often we treat people who come into therapy for depression and anxiety, and those can actually be like major symptoms of untreated ADHD. So I think there's a statistic about people who aren't having positive outcomes from therapy from like a depression and anxiety perspective. It's like 60% of those people who don't get better with treatment actually have an underlying ADHD diagnosis. And you're attempting to treat the symptom of this thing that's not being treated.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Everybody's learning about that now since we're all getting older and like people assigned female at birth now are like late 20s, early 30s and thinking like, okay, all the boys got assessed and treated in childhood, but we didn't. And
right.
So there's a lot of information coming out now. Tell me kind of like more about what day-to-day life looks like for you in unpacking this diagnosis and starting to change the way, presumably, that you kind of like live and function to be what I call more borderline friendly.
Oh, I am still figuring that out. But what I have so far, the major thing is that, okay, so I make a schedule of the things that I do every single day because I'm getting a cosplay ready for a con that I'm going to in April. So I religiously stick to my schedule because if I don't, I will forget, first of all, and I won't do it, even though I love doing it, which doesn't really make sense, but I just won't. And I make sure to schedule rest days for myself because I know that if I don't, I will crash. And a rest day consists of coming home and literally just going to bed right away. So things like that, I am making a much bigger effort to control. I get a lot of rage, like a lot of rage. And I am making efforts to step away when I need to not respond to things, and to see things from other people's point of view is the most difficult thing ever. But I know that usually if I don't respond right away in a rage, I can figure that out. You know, funnily enough, watching TV helps a lot with that. Thinking critically about what each character does and why they do it has helped a lot in real life. But yeah, I don't know. I don't manage it very well, admittedly. But those are some of the things that I do to help with that. Rest days are so important. I will burn out so easily because I will hyper-focus on things like an extreme way. Like on a Saturday, I will get up and I will go into the craft room and it will be like 10 hours later. And I'm like, oh yeah, I just meant to like paint this thing really quick. And now I haven't eaten or showered or used the bathroom. And like, it feels like my body's falling apart. I should go take care of those things. So my schedule is like my savior. I need it, and I need it to tell me what to do because I include things like showering on it.
That's so important. It's living with borderline is exhausting.
Yes, it is. I always feel like that. And I feel like people will want reasonable things from me. And I just get angry because I'm like, I can't give you this. And like, I realize that a normal person would be able to, but like, I'm so exhausted. I've had a good few days. I've been happy. It's great, but I'm just tired now. And like, I can't do that thing. I need to go sleep.
Absolutely. Yeah. I sleep way more than the average. I know Lori is like, exhausted all the time too. And, you know, it's like explaining to people you're on this emotional roller coaster all day long rapidly. And so if your mood is like cycling, if you have like five of those episodes of like high rage, even if you don't throw a pizza box across the room, right? But you're still experiencing anger. So there's like the lead up to the anger. Then there's the anger. Then there's the guilt. Then there's the shame. Yes. Then there's the like, okay, it's okay. It happened. It won't happen again. Right? Like that is a huge cycle. And we repeat that multiple times throughout the day.
Yeah.
Fucking exhausting.
And when you get good at it and like you don't start screaming at people, no one realizes that you went through that. So now it's like, oh, why are you like tired and grumpy all of a sudden? And it's like, because I just went through a whole process to not like just scream at you in the middle of work. I actually wrote down something that you said in one of the episodes. That it was, I have to work 10 times harder to be half as functional as everyone else. And that's what I feel all the time. Because I'm like, you do not understand how much effort I'm putting in to just be this person. And I'm still not living up to any expectations. But like, this is my best.
100%. It happens less often now, but for the vast majority of my adult life, when I would stop by my parents, I could see within like 15 minutes, my mom becoming so overwhelmed. And she would say like, you're way too much. Like she would be like, I can't, like, it's overwhelming to me to listen to you like rapidly tell your stories and bounce around and like all of these things. And that was so rejecting for me. And I was thinking like, well, I'm confused because it's taking everything in me to just be here, right? And to try to cultivate this relationship with you. And then you're telling me that I'm too much and I haven't even been here for an hour. And it's like, you know, that process people don't realize of, well, you think I'm just like being this like unhinged version of me, but actually I'm going through this whole process of trying to keep this shit together.
And that phrase specifically is one I tell myself all the time anyway. So
yeah,
that I'm too much.
Yeah, it's rough. Okay, my friend, you're so new in your diagnosis. I'd love to revisit this conversation in like a year and check back in.
Yeah.
But just for the fun of it, let's take this ADHD inventory. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerd and I want to know.
No, I love these things.
Okay, so I'm going to screenshot for you the answer thing and put it in the chat so you can understand where we're at here. Because I don't want you to have to remember, but for people listening, this is the ADHD self-reporting tool. It was developed by, I think, Harvard. The scores go from a 0 to 4, 0 being never and 4 being very often. How often do you make careless mistakes when you have to work on a boring or difficult project?
Often.
How often do you have difficulty keeping your attention when you're doing boring or repetitive work?
Very often.
How often do you have difficulty concentrating on what people say to you?
Often.
How often do you have trouble wrapping up the final details of a project once the hard parts have been done?
Often.
How often do you have difficulty getting things in order when you have to do a task that requires organization?
Often.
When you have a task that requires a lot of thought, how often do you avoid or delay starting?
Very often.
How often do you misplace or have difficulty finding things at home or work?
Sometimes. I'm strangely organized.
Yeah, but
sounds like in a disorganized way. I'm very messy, but I know where everything is.
Yeah, I love it. How often are you distracted by activity or noise?
Very often.
Dude, my partner's fish tank, there's not enough water in the very top of it, I lose my fucking mind. How often do you have problems remembering appointments or obligations?
You know what? I would say very often, but everything is in my calendar.
Okay. So. Love it. And how often do you fidget or squirm?
Oh, very often.
How often do you leave your seat in meetings where you're supposed to stay seated?
Sometimes.
How often do you feel restless?
Often.
How often do you have difficulty unwinding when you have time to yourself?
Often.
And this is like physically unwinding, not just like the borderline, like emotional unwinding.
You know what? Let's do sometimes then.
Okay.
I'm usually very tired, so it's easy.
How often do you feel overly active and compelled to do things?
Sometimes.
How often do you find yourself talking too much?
Very often.
Oh my God, me too. how often do you finish the sentences of other people?
Sometimes.
How often do you have a hard time waiting your turn?
Often.
And how often do you interrupt others?
Often.
Okay. So let me do some math. You guys are getting a little insight into what it's like to have Sarah as a therapist. 3, 7, yeah. 13, 16, 20, 22, 26, 27, 4, 6, 9, 11, 13, 17, 19, 22, 25. All right. So 0 to 16, unlikely to have ADHD. 17 to 23, likely. 24 or greater, highly likely to have ADHD. So, therapists can't diagnose ADHD, so like this is where you would be referred to an ADHD specific provider, psychologist who goes through the testing process.
Wow, I had no idea that it was diagnosis specific.
Well, ADHD is a brain disorder.
Okay, so, it seems really obvious now that you say that.
Yeah, but ADHD is a brain disorder, whereas borderline is like a behavioral
disorder. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was like, oh, wow, that's a revelation.
Yeah. So your therapist should be referring you to somebody.
Okay. Yeah.
24 or greater, highly likely, you scored a 27 in inattentive ADHD, which is what we used to call attention deficit disorder, ADD.
Okay.
And then you scored a 25 in the hyperactivity part of ADHD. So this is like, you know, a kind of combined presentation. Do you want me to screenshot you these results and send them to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm interested in this.
Okay.
I also get nerdy about this.
I'm being way too invasive right now. I hope this is okay.
No, this is fine.
Okay. You can be like, my friend administered me the ADHD self-reporting tool, and these are the results, and she thinks further assessing would be a good idea. I will email those to you, but I think it's worth looking into.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel?
I feel excited. I mean, I just like doing this, so that excitement is carrying over into this.
Totally. How do you feel about your borderline diagnosis after having kind of like listened to other people talk about their stories? I know you said that was an important thing for you, was to have a diagnosis to find people.
Yeah, super validated. It's so, because for most of my life, I have felt like some kind of failure. Like everything comes super easily to everyone else, it seems like, but not me. There's something wrong with me. So like, oh yeah, having this thing is like, there's a reason for the way I behave, and also other people do it. And I can actually find people to talk to who understand me. Like, mm-hmm. That's wild.
Yeah, the feeling not alone is so, I don't know, precious, special, profound. Like, it's so many different things.
Because, like, I have friends who are aware of things that are going on with me, and, like, they're supportive. They're, you know, there. They talk to me, but it's like, I don't really get it, you know? So.
Yeah, you can't get this unless you live it, because that is how big it is. I put out an episode last night called That Breakup Felt Like Death, and it was based on my husband watching me this summer, because we've been in an ethically non-monogamous relationship, and my previous partner, who I had known, you know, and well, who I had been in a relationship before I met my husband, he and I broke up in September, and my husband was like there, obviously watching, sitting in bed with me while I was hysterical. And he said to me afterwards, I have never witnessed anybody experience a breakup like that. The only thing I can relate that to is if he died. And I was just like, well, I don't know how else to handle that. And like, my husband actually experienced the death of his wife. So I think that statement too is even more profound, right? Because like, he knows what that's like. Not that my other partner was I wasn't married to them or anything, but like, that for me was it really is that different to have borderline, because we don't know anything different.
Right. It does literally feel like a few of my friends have either cut me off, or I thought they were cutting me off. And it did literally feel like someone was dying. It felt like I was dying. And like, one of my friends who was, the way I would phrase it is, they essentially just said, okay, yeah, no, we're not speaking anymore. I literally laid in bed, like, I have no idea who I am. Mm-hmm. A part of me just died. I don't know what to do. Like, the feeling of not knowing, it feels like you're a fake person. Like, I don't exist anymore because this person left me. It's horrifying.
Yeah. Ooh, I can't wait for people to hear that statement, because I think so many people probably resonate with that, specifically people who struggle with favorite person. My friend, we are at our time. What is one thing you want people to know about borderline?
People with borderline will be unbelievably loyal to you as long as you treat them right, and are understanding, and as long as they work with you to have a good relationship.
Yeah, it's definitely co-created partnership in that way, regardless of if it's romantic or not. Laura, it's been so fun. This went differently than we expected, but they always do. Yeah.
I love this, and I absolutely want to do it again.
Yes, please. Circle back. I also have a resource for you. Charlie Health, who we're actually, I'm actually going to interview a representative from them. They're a telehealth intensive outpatient program. They have DBT. It's specifically for young people up into the age of 34. And I know people who've done this program and had good experiences, but I think the great part about it is how accessible it is online, right? And they have a DBT program and they get people in generally pretty quickly. They are in network with insurances, and they're in 25 states. I don't know specifically about Michigan. What is the initial, like the abbreviation for Michigan? Is it MI?
Yeah, MI.
Okay, they're in Michigan. So
nice.
Worth looking into.
Yes, absolutely. Are you going to email it to me?
Yeah, and you can also just Google Charlie Health. And so there's a phone number for them. I would recommend calling them. But it's been so fun. And yeah, I'd love to kind of circle back after a while, especially after you talk to your doctor about this ADHD thing.
Yeah, that is so helpful to know that it's not my therapist, it's someone else.
Yeah, you'll have to ask your therapist for a referral, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, guys, that was such a fun episode with Laura. Laura, thank you again, and we're so stoked for you on your journey and excited to welcome you into our BBB community. Thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. As always, if you could head over to Apple or Spotify and give us a rating, a review, or just tell your friends and family about us, that would be way cool. It's how we get more listeners and continue to build this borderline super feelers community. You can also support us on Patreon. The link is going to be in the show notes. That is very helpful for us because we invest a lot of time and energy into this podcast, and it's totally for free. So any little bit of support is great to keep us going. And there's also a ton of bonus content over on Patreon. Bonus episodes that will never go live to the public because they're maybe a little too personal. And worksheets and all sorts of support going on over there. So head to our Patreon if you are interested. If you are interested in coming on the podcast or attending Super Feelers, hit us up. We want to talk to you. Feel free to email us at boldbeautifulborderline@gmail.com or go to our website at boldbeautifulborderline.com where you can sign up for Super Feelers. You can check out what's going on the blog. There are some resources available there, but also you can leave us a voicemail, ask us a question, interact with us. Okay, we'll see you next time.